Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza.
Yeah, I got to put on my good sweatpants.
I got to pull the tubing off of the hot end and it wouldn't come off.
Big O! Showtime!
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cats, you can get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a little bad. For the streaming, go direct to dlmgs.org and ICChannelAnalytics.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the gala's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 924 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we got Pat.
Starting to feel like four.
Yeah, we have Joel.
Good evening.
And we have Joe.
I'm here.
One person off of vacation, now you are on vacation, and Pat and I have just been working like dogs, right? And
grinding away.
That's it. And so I just want to throw in here, because I know I brought it up the past couple of weeks, after another week of waiting, we finally got an answer to our tech support question. This has only been going on a month, to a certain company support. And we did not like the answer, but we implemented the answer. And it seems so far now, of course, we implemented it yesterday on two of our functions and tomorrow and a third one today. So it was done yesterday afternoon when we got everything we wanted in place, pushed it to production. And it seems to have resolved the issue. I myself was not thrilled with the response. The guy I was working with was not thrilled with the response. Our lead was not thrilled with the response. Basically, it kind of seemed, the response seemed to fly in the face of the proposal for what this is supposed to do. It's kind of like Amazon's Lambda that you're supposed to be able to have these functions and not have, you know, they're on demand execution, and it should be snappy, and it is snappy 95% of the time. But when it wasn't, it was so egregious in how long it was taking that it was a serious problem. And so what they basically came back and said to us was, what we notice is you have a period where there's a flurry of activity and the functions executors spin up. So you have multiple functions running in parallel at the same time to cover this load. And then the load goes away, all the requests go away, and then it just aggressively tears itself down so that when the next message comes in that needs to be acted upon, for some reason, it's not doing anything. It's not like spinning up another executor to handle this function for some reason. And their response for our solution to this was to make sure that we have a minimum of two executors going for these functions. So you have a minimum of two instances available. So that seems to have solved the problem, but it should, like, that shouldn't be a problem to begin with. And so, after having implemented this and looking at it and observing it and then improving our logging on all this stuff, so that's the next big thing I really want to get looking into. Not to go too deep into a rabbit hole on that, but man, we had another problem last week, where we had an outage, and when I looked at stuff, it appeared that the Nginx container that we use as a proxy back to the Node.js container, wasn't able to communicate to the Node.js container, so it was timing out on communicating to it. And there was a spurt of this stuff, like 1,000 of this instance happening in the logs during this time period. And so we looked at this and I thought, it seems like it's being, it is a problem with this audit process that was going on. They kind of go hand in hand during this period, that once we stopped the audit process, it the issue cleaned up. So I started looking back into logs and seeing during the period of time where the audit process was running matched when we were seeing these errors in the logs. Now, these errors have been happening frequently, but not to the extent of when we had the outage. Like when you had the outage and during a 15-minute period, we had like a couple thousand. Whereas normally we see maybe 10 or 15 an hour, which is still way too much, right? I don't like that, seeing it. But I made a mistake in my query to the logging software. When I looked at so we run east and west, and it's only one region is active at a time. So the way that our logging works, we're moving out of Sumo Logic, which is a great product, and we're kind of moving into Google Stackdriver, which is Google Logger. And so our logs are not aggregated in one location like they would be in Stackdriver. They are by cluster or project. So our clusters, our Kubernetes clusters are projects also. And then we have other projects that in Google. So when I want to look at the container logs, I have to go to the cluster logs. And when I want to look at our like function logs and stuff like that, it's inside our other project. So I had mistakenly gone to the cluster where it was the inactive region, and I went back in time to when it was the active region to look for these errors. And I had our namespace in there, but in each cluster our namespace is named after the region it's in. So I was looking in the west namespace for in the east cluster, and obviously that wasn't producing anything, so it made it look like to me, making that mistake, that there wasn't any errors when we weren't active in that cluster. So long story short, I found out that I was wrong. So these errors are happening regardless of if the audit process was working or not. And then I noticed this, and our error logs are so noisy because somewhere in this whole thing for this specific application, we're seeing this is just another one of the errors that is being tacked on to a whole host of other ones that all have a similar problem of communication. It's either Couchbase, timeouts, not able to do DNS lookups. This one right here where the Nginx container can't communicate with the Node.js container. And just not able to do health checks for the Kubernetes service, not able to do health checks on the load balancer service. So they're all related to the same thing, that there's something that is going on that is consuming enough of the resources on the container that it's disrupting communication because the container's blocked from being able to to respond properly. And it's been a bugger to try and figure out, but we're replacing this application and nobody wants to invest time in it, but our logs are filled with shit and it's annoying. So I've been trying to get more on top of, hey, if I'm looking back in our logs and we're having these messages appear over and over and over again, and we're not deeming it to be a problem that we want to fix, then let's not log it anymore. Because it just makes it a lot more difficult to track down issues when there is a problem that we want to fix, and whether or not you know, if I'm looking at something that's noise and trying to filter out the noise, it makes it a lot more difficult to do. So anyway, that is complete segue rabbit hole down there. I wanted to clean up logging and stuff. But the function, the support, we got it working. It only took a month. I'm going to, my next step tomorrow is I really want to look at why this isn't a consistent problem, because I know looking at our metrics for the past month that we have it scale up quite frequently, a flurry of activity, then it scales back down. Why weren't we seeing this regularly? So anyway, that's where we are. We finally got a resolution. Now, I'll believe it a week from now when we haven't seen that problem surface, because it happens maybe once or twice a day. But the one application that I did fix today was the biggest culprit. And so we'll see. Anyway.
Yep.
That's what I want to fill you in.
Hey, Dan.
Manny Fry.
What's going on?
Just whining about a certain company's tech support.
I hear you. I've been following. But regarding your logging stuff, I'm actually going through a lot of that same stuff right now with this client. I'm actually out on location for the first time in more than a year. I'm actually out in L.A. right now.
Oh, boy.
You get rid of their noise?
Well, one thing, because it's federal, they really need to be sanitizing a lot of this stuff, because they go into like more secure networks and stuff like that. Like, I don't want operators going in and looking at stuff and then having to go run through thousands of lines of code when they see a problem and having to sanitize all of that and then send them all back down to a lower side network, right? So I want the developers to be more proactive about what noisiness they're putting into those logs and what's really deemed relevant for the certain environments that they deploy to. But the other thing is, are you doing any log aggregation at all with these? Like, I've been looking into lately, like Grafana Loki, right? Like you can set like a fluent bit. There's like a fluent bit, like daemon set you can run inside of those namespaces. You can have, it's called like Promtail. You can configure your pods when they deploy to aggregate logs and funnel them out into a common location, and usually it's typically a Loki server, right? And then you use Grafana as the presentation for that. So whether you're doing app metrics, you can aggregate that through Prometheus there. You can do log aggregation through Loki there. You can do application tracing through Tempo over there. All of these things kind of just run in that namespace that you're deploying to, and then you have one kind of unified interface. So you can really kind of start tracking down and even start alerting. Like, if those things are being so noisy on you, you could, you know, make it alert somebody so that they can go and address it, right? Because they don't want to keep getting alerted like that.
Yep.
So in regards to that, no, we don't have the aggregation part going yet. And I know that they've been looking into a bunch of things. That's a goal that they have, and it's difficult for me to go and try and implement some of that stuff because I don't have the permissions on the services to be able to do that, which is unfortunate at this time. But they're trying to get all the logs aggregated, I think, into big data and using the tools that they have in there for as the next step. But right now it was pretty much getting all this stuff logging how they want it and then setting up that whole aggregation thing.
Right. That's like what we use now. We started, we've been over a year now using Datadog, which does UI synthetics as well as it can do log aggregation and alerting based on certain things. And we actually just enabled GMX extensions into our listeners so we can monitor the JVMs that are a part of our product. And they have a monitor within Datadog that does that. And we're going to start eventually looking into possibly kicking off ServiceNow incidents whenever that happens, so that we can take a look at those and figure out if we can, well, Usually, by the time an alert goes on the GVM heap, we're pretty close to running out anyway. But you know, so there's usually not a whole lot we can do. But at least we have the history, and that's where we're going. And probably the bigger thing that I wish we could do is we can only have some logs enabled, just for a period of like troubleshooting. Because if we left it open, like the database access server JVM process, if I leave verbose logging turned on all the time, I'll fill 2 gigs probably about every 15 minutes or so. So,
you shouldn't leave verbose logging on in production environments anyway. Only windows of it, right?
Well, that's kind of my opinion. Although nowadays. I'd rather, because part of the problem is, you know, we can't just take any of our customer systems down anytime when there's a problem, you know. And we want to be able to find out, well, catch the history of that. So what would be awesome is if our R&D department would add the ability to ship logs somewhere so that they don't have to sit on the hard drive. Performance-wise, should be fine. The other thing they could do, if they couldn't do that, is have more levels of logging so that we can put it in like an error mode, or you know, have it log only errors so that we can catch, well, what caused the outage and help determine root cause. Whereas right now, everything we're trying to capture with Datadog is helping us find root cause. Like the other day, I had an admin. I was working something else, but I had another admin. He actually fixed a problem. But I'm like, okay, well, why did you do it? Is my question. Is why did you recycle that? I mean, you know that took them down, right? Yeah, but it, you know, it was stale or what. I'm like, well, but how are we going to figure out what actually caused the problem?
Joel, do you know if yours are Java Spring Boot apps or Java Spring apps or anything like that?
No, they're nothing like that.
Well, I know they're Java apps because you keep talking about JVM, but they're not based on Spring.
No.
Jeez, why the hell not?
Because it's an old application. Anyway, I couldn't tell you if they use Spring. To be honest, because you know it's just wrote by our R&D department. You know, we have the same code running in the cloud that we run. Our clients run on prem. So, but
gotcha.
Yeah. So I mean, so it's all about trying to catch that. What was the root cause? So I go back in Datadog and I looked at that day in Datadog and discovered, oh wait a minute, their licenses were running low. That's why restarting it probably fixed it, because when they stopped it, it freed up some licenses, and when they started it back up again, they were able to log in and do their thing. And I did some more not license analysis based on calculations that our R&D and support folks have given us over the years. And I'm like, yeah, you're short, and that's what happened. So and it's one of those things where we have a whole host of clients that were basically brought in the infancy of my department, where we had people doing things they didn't, you know, they really didn't know all they needed to know to do what they did. They just did it and got it to work, kind of. So now we're tracking all sorts of issues. Plus, I think another thing that's happened too is as the pandemic's starting to slow down a little bit, and colleges are doing more things with in-person classes and stuff, a lot of the enrollments are up too, just because of that. So we're seeing a case where last year and a half or so, we didn't see any problems, but now we're starting to see more problems because the servers are poorly tuned. So, but that's one of my problems, and the other problem that I have this week is admins who are lower down the chain than me. Basically, they'll just send a Slack, says, hey, does anybody know how to do this? I'm like, did you bother searching our customer center to find out? You know, basically, they're not putting in any effort to actually look at things. You know, and they'll just send Joel a message. Hey, Joel. And I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to stop answering them at some point and say, you guys got to find it on your own. But I'm not that kind of guy. Yep. And we're going more and more down the path of automation. Right now, we're using Jenkins and GitOps quite a bit. I think we may be migrating away from GitOps because I think the or not GitOps Jenkins. I think they may be using some other code for deploying the applications and maintaining them. Plus, they're also looking at we have. I don't know if it's a product or what, but basically they're trying to automate some of the maintenance so that the maintenance runs and we just have to validate, you know, and then once we've gone through quite a few rounds of validation, then the maintenance would run unattended because right now we're sitting at 51 clients and we signed at least 20 or 30 this year that should all be online next year.
Is your stuff's not containerized, right, Joel?
Not yet. We're going to go that way.
You'll definitely want to get off Jenkins. It's good for building container images and those in cloud environments.
Right. Yeah, we're definitely going that way. But we've also got a more difficult thing, too, in that a lot of our clients have access to the non-prods. You know, by access, I mean RDP access. Or they might even have a SSH access, depending on the server. So once we go containers, that's going to stop. And we have to figure out a different way that they can apply their customizations. And it's more than just logging in and changing some graphics and stuff.
You need a config server, man.
Need a what?
A config server.
Yeah, well. They also kind of moved my department into. We're now, instead of, we used to be part of the customer experience office from that C-level, and that has just now changed. We're part of product, so we have much more direct access to R&D. So we're going to be pushing them hard to say, hey, you need to do things better. Like one of the good examples is we clone our systems. That's actually the big project the engineering team's working on right now, and I'm kind of there as an advisor because I know the product. So we're writing automation to do the clones. So basically, to delete the environment, to copy the data from either S3 or wherever. Restore the if it's a SQL system, restore the SQL database as well as copy the app home over. But before you do that, it's gonna delete the old environment. And there is an internal process in the application that it's called a BECU. So basically, if you have it configured properly, you could run that, and it does a lot of the deprotification of the data. So basically, it'll take out like URLs to payment gateways and stuff that are pointing at a prod and replace it with a non-prod and things like that. And unfortunately, the configuration screen in production, because this is where you configure all that stuff, is in production. It only lets you save one set of values, so it doesn't have multiple profiles for all the different non-prod environments you might create. So we're thinking of ways around that with our particular code that we have. We'll get that down to so that the not just the clone, but the validation of the clone is also automated in some form. And I'm starting to learn more and more AWS. I did just last week. One of my clients, they wrote a custom API, and they wanted a way to see the logs, but they can't get RDP access to production for obvious reasons. So I wrote basically a one-line task scheduler command that uploads it up to S3 bucket. And really the last piece of it is I need to find the documentation on if there is documentation on the particular bucket that I gave them, or I need to work with platform and get them the codes. And I don't want to just throw the codes at him and say, here you go, figure it out on your own. I need to help him set it up too, so that he can actually get at that log. So, but, I think last time since we talked, Dan Fry, I did get my AWS Certified Cloud Practitioner certification.
Oh, nice, congrats.
Yep. And I'm hopefully going to start working on we use a cloud guru for training. And one of the things that's been kind of difficult is just getting time to do it. So I was looking at taking a class on there on Ansible, because we also use Ansible. The next stage would be looking at one of the higher certifications in AWS, which is definitely the direction I want to go. Unfortunately, past the certification I just took, certification price goes up a little bit, and I have to pay for that first before I take it. And once I take it and pass it, the company will pay for it. But more automation. And training.
That's where it's going, man. That's where it's going.
Yep. Yeah, we have to. I mean, we just have to. I mean, we can't do all the on-hands work that we are doing today. And if we keep doing it that way, we're just going to die. I mean, it's just, you know, we can't. And last bit of house news that I'll have right now is now the inside is completely complete. they when they put the dishwasher in after we closed, they had basically, I think when they put the cabinets in, they put them a little too wide for the dishwasher. So you can see the sides of the dishwasher and they didn't have the filler plates here. So they had to order some of those, get those in, and then have some guy put them in there. So he put them in there the day, and now it looks good. Now we're just waiting on a handful of things for the outside, and then stuff, warranty stuff as it comes along, which has been pretty, you know, nothing really big has come up, except for when we went to turn the heat on the first time, and I felt stupid.
Didn't turn on the gas?
No, the gas was on. And in our old house, there was actually a switch in the it was the furnace and all that was right in the same room as the washer and dryer. So there's a switch on the wall that you can actually turn off and turn on. Well, really the whole system, because it turned off everything. So it turned off like the air conditioner and everything. Well, apparently our HVAC unit has a switch inside of it that turns the ability to turn the heat on. But the air conditioning works fine without that. So anyway, so luckily we noticed it now before it got, oh my God, cold, but
yeah.
Joel, we had two major things go on this summer. The entire septic field had to be dug up and regraded. The jackass who put it in didn't put in enough clay around it. The pipes aren't level, so all the liquid goes to one end, and it just was starting to bust out the back of it. It's not even two years old.
Damn.
So this has been a fight. I'm actually now considering legal action against this guy, because there's a lot of other stuff that was supposed to be put in place that just was not. So yeah, so this minute. But lately we have two condensers for our air conditioning, and one of them went. The one that happened to be for the upstairs went.
Uh-oh.
So it's up in there. The coil went. Luckily, this was all under warranty, so it's not costing me a thing. However,
right.
I come home because the guy showed up while I was at an appointment, and my wife's like, there was a loud bang up there. And so I go upstairs, and there is like a 3-foot hole in the ceiling because the guy fell in the attic and came through.
Oh, no.
Did he at least repair it?
Well, yes, the company is repairing it. It's dry. It's they put new drywall up there now, and it's been spackled, but they got to come back and sand it and paint it and all that, which I have no problem doing. It's just out of principle, I'm not doing it, right? Like,
exactly.
Right. You know, yeah.
They broke it. They get to fix it.
Yeah, they at least fix the air conditioner because, man, in that office there where I work out of all day when I'm not traveling, oh my God, it was over 80 degrees in just in that office alone. Actually, the one day it recorded 90, right? Like,
you should try working in my garage.
Oh yeah, I bet.
Yeah, in Texas.
Yeah, I'm hitting this in Pennsylvania though. You know what I mean?
Right.
Only been up to 120 a couple times.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and I'm actually up the only upstairs there is, which is my office, because the rest of the house is all on one floor. We don't even have a basement, which I'm fine with.
It's a little odd, but sometimes I'll be out in my garage working. It'll be 120, and I'll be in my underwear. Gotta survive somehow.
Right.
Oh, yeah, speaking of legal action, I'll talk to y'all about that next week.
Uh-oh. So I'm actually going to be writing a review for our with our house came a Culosis panel, and it basically is an ADT security system, which also integrates smart home stuff into it as well, like our door lock. And I got some automation on the porch light because it's controlled by a switch inside the house. So I have it scheduled to come on at a sunset, go off and at sunrise, and all of the lights that are smart lights, which aren't really, there's not that many of them, one of them that are actually, none of them are, but it's all via Z-Wave. All right, and all connects up to that panel, which then in turn I can actually use my app, the alarm.com app on my phone, to lock and unlock the door, and set the security system too. And what's kind of nice thing with the security system is, if we go like Friday night, we'll probably go to the grocery store, and I'll set the security system before we leave. And then when I pull in the driveway, the house senses, hey, Joel's home, and it automatically turns the security system off. Hey. So,
hold on. Pat.
Go.
Are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Hey, what do you think about a 38 snub?
What do you mean? Like a snub nose?
Yeah.
Oh, they're okay, you know, because it's got that little short barrel. It's going to have a little more recoil than, you know, a longer barrel. Okay. I like 9mm, man. Well, whatever you like.
Don't get me wrong. I like 9mm. I like 45s. Heck, I've even shot a 50 caliber Desert Eagle a few times. I'm looking for something a little bit smaller. I live in Texas. I can carry if I want.
Well, the big thing, the big negative with those is you only got 6 or 7 rounds, sometimes 5, depending on how big.
Right.
You know, my Glock, you know, I got 15 or, you know, even 17 round magazines.
If I need 17 rounds, something has gone seriously wrong.
No, you don't need it until you need it.
Okay, I was just curious about your opinion on it.
You can always carry. You can always keep a truck gun, you know, like an AK-47 under folder, or you know, an AR pistol.
Yeah. I also have, you know, a 12 gauge and a 20 gauge, but yeah.
Well, shotguns are cool too, you know, but the big negative of them too is capacity.
Yeah.
I like ARs. ARs, you know. 100% well, American, baby.
Don't get me wrong. There's nothing like carrying around a saw with a drum, but
I'm shallow, you know, those are fun.
They're super fun. I used to carry one around all the time. But I, that seems a little much.
Yeah, yeah. If you like a snub nose, get a snub nose. End of story. Get whatever you like.
Well, my dad has a 22, but I'd like at least a little bit more stopping power than that.
Yeah, that ain't, you know, unless they're like 3 feet away, they ain't gonna get the job done.
Yeah. Okay. All right, that's all I had on that.
It's better to have something than not have anything.
Mm-hmm.
Even a Kelt piece of shit Kel-Tec made out of plastic that comes apart as you shoot rounds. That's better than nothing.
Yeah. I definitely don't want a 50 caliber Desert Eagle.
No. If you want like your wrists and hands in one piece, definitely.
I shot one when I was like 17.
Listen, I got a 357 Magnum revolver, and I can't shoot more than like 20 rounds of 357 Magnums in them. So I usually, when I'm practicing with that, I just run 38 specials through it.
Okay.
You can.
Well, it's been forever since I shot anything, and I probably shouldn't have gone this long.
Yeah, get your ass to the range, man.
Right. Makes me wish I still lived out in the desert.
If I was in Texas, I'd freaking meet you and we'll go shoot.
Yeah. Okay. I gotta check and see what ranges are around me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could use some practice. I used to be pretty darn good with, you know, a rifle, but...
Yeah, handguns you need to practice. Time. Especially handguns. Rifles are easy, man. Handguns you need to practice.
Alright. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime.
Well, trying to think. Amazon brought something out this week. The Amazon Astro.
Well, that's that robot thing, right?
Yep, it's basically
with that.
Like,
go ahead.
It's kind of like like an Echo on steroids, but it has like a camera, like I guess when you're gone, it'll like patrol the house and like record video, and like you can do things
it
promises not to send all that video back to Amazon.
Well, of course. Well, no, actually, it's sent. Well, yeah, technically, it is because
exactly
the video. Well, the video portion works with the Ring system. So,
no, I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah. So, I'm even better because the introductory price is $999.
Nope.
Yep. And after that, it's going to go up to $1,449. I'm even better with that.
Nope. I'm good.
It at least he can bring you a drink, but you have to have someone in the kitchen load it for you, and then they have to tell it to go take the drink to
didn't somebody, you know, build like an R2-D2 with a fridge in the middle, like in the 80s or something?
Probably. I'd rather build
that
my
would
own
go
robot.
Around and
yeah. I'd rather build my own robot, but I do admit I have an iRobot right now. I have the Brava Jet M6 for mopping the flooring downstairs because, oh my god, this house has so much flooring.
No, we've been wanting to get one for a long time. I'm just not sure if it's actually a really good idea considering
iRobots?
Our dogs have any type of Roomba or anything like that just because our dogs have such coarse fur.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, that's a good. A good point there. Fortunately, I don't have to worry about dogs and dog fur anymore, but and unfortunately too. But
yeah.
But yeah, I'm not convinced of because I'm like, well, why have a robot roam your house with a camera? Why not just put up multiple cameras and be done with it? I mean, the only kind of
cool
nice,
factor,
right? The only kind of nice thing is that you can remotely control it, So, like, in the video they showed...
Minus the cool factor, I think you could pay like $50 for each camera and cover every room in your house
For less than $1,000.
Yeah, way less.
Yep. But the one kind of neat thing that they showed in the commercial was there was a couple sitting on a bench, and he got his phone out, was controlling the robot, and had the robot go look at his stove to make sure he turned the stove off. So.
Yeah. Next, they'll be trying to get you to buy the smart stove, so that way, you know, you can preheat it from 100 miles away if you want to. Make sure you turned it off.
Now, I will say our new gas stove, I really love it, but there's one thing I don't like about it. It doesn't have a self-clean mode.
Ugh. Yeah, but, I gotta bust mine open and clean it one of these days.
Yeah, I need to start doing that every other month or so. But
speaking of taking things apart and cleaning them, I took apart my computer in the garage today and
glorious
cleaned about 10 pounds of dust off of it, and tried to use this Tower Raid that I picked up at a really good price, but the Rocket 62 PCIe to eSATA controller that came with it just doesn't work with Linux.
Mm-hmm.
No luck there.
How new is it?
It's like 2015.
And it doesn't work with Linux?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Speaking of not working with Linux, did you ever buy a printer yet, Dan?
No, not yet. I talked to my wife about it the other day. She's like, yeah, I still want a printer. She's like, I don't care if you order off of Amazon or go off of Facebook, Marketplace or Craigslist or whatever. It's just, you know, you pick it and get whatever you think is right, and I'll
get
be happy with
cheap
it.
Cheap-ass $40 printer, and then when it craps out, go buy another cheap-ass $40 printer.
But Dan wants to put it on the network.
That's the problem. The cheap ass $40 printer is like you go on the Facebook Marketplace, you get a laser printer for almost $50 bucks.
Well, if you can get a decent one, get a decent one.
It looks like a decent one, you know, but it's so hard to tell, you know what I mean?
At that price, $40 to $50, for a printer, rolling the dice, you can do it again next month if you need to.
I mean, yeah, and you're right.
And the other upside there, though, is if you get the cheap one, it's going to have color. If you get her a laser printer, unless you spend buku bucks, you're talking black and white only.
Yeah, we're fine with black and white. I'm not going...
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, just don't get the old LaserJet 3s.
Here's like a Dell LaserJet printer, letter network USB with toner, new, $55.
Right. Go dumpster diving in the business district.
HP LaserJet P3015, $60.
Really?
Yeah.
It's got me thinking, too. I try not to print things, so I mean, I
don't like printing either. I hate printing.
I like just slamming it on, just slamming on my iPad, and I'm done with it. You know.
Yeah, printing things sucks until you avoid it until you know you absolutely have to.
Right.
I mean, we'll go months without printing anything, and then it seems like we're printing out 20-30 documents a day.
Yep.
Now here's one: HP LaserJet Pro M. 130NW all-in-one laser, all-in-one wireless laser printer, works with Alexa. $55. It's been on.
Damn.
It's been on here 3 weeks now for Newport News, Virginia. I should just bite the bullet because I was looking at this one
working?
A couple weeks ago. Yeah, it says almost
and it's a
new.
Pro, so it's color, right?
No, it's not color. Well, hold on. I don't. No, it's one of those. That has the, copying capability, like the scanner part on it. I think that's what a LaserJet Pro is.
Okay.
Wait, let me see.
Even if you need to replace the replaceables on it, that sounds like it's a good price.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It sells new for $299.95.
Then that sounds like a really good used price.
Yeah, it does. And they say it's like new.
Is it shipping or is it local pickup? I'll tell you right now, on Facebook Marketplace, you basically can't trust shipping.
No.
Well, I mean, it's in Newport News. That's like...
Well, that's not far.
10 minutes from where I live, depending on traffic. Yeah. Where it is... It's not that far away, is what it is. And...
Yep. Well, I think more and more as time goes on, because I'm starting to research my next phone. And Dan Fry, you'll be proud of me. I'm probably going back to Pixels. Especially the new, the Pixel 6 looks fantastic so far. Even though they haven't had an official announcement yet.
Yeah, price per performance has probably fallen back on Google's side for that one.
Yep. Well, my biggest complaint, is there is no Note this year.
Right.
There may not be a Note at all. Anymore.
Well, because the S21 the Fold $2,000 phone, blah blah blah.
Right.
But the S21 Ultra, didn't that come with a pen?
No, I don't think it did.
One of the S20, one of the S lines started coming out with a pen.
And
if they come out with a
pen,
then they might as well be a freaking Note. Especially
right.
Considering the screen size is basically that of early Notes.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on a second. Maybe it's the S22 Ultra that's going to come with the pen.
Okay.
There's an article on Ars Technica that says the Galaxy Note is back. It's just going to be called the Galaxy S22 Ultra.
Yeah. If it comes with a pen, it might as well be the Note.
And that release is probably in time where I'll have this current one paid off.
That's going to be a $2,000 phone as well.
Well, yeah.
But I still hear complaints about the Fold not really having the specs to keep up.
Well, my biggest complaint on the Fold is the where it folds. There's just pretty much no way to avoid it having a crease, within minutes of you buying it.
I've heard that that's actually not too bad this time around with this current Fold. But
I looked at the 3, and it had it.
I would be concerned more about the fact that, you know, it has 3 screens, essentially.
Yeah.
And yeah, one of those breaks, guess what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does the Z Flip...
Yep.
That's basically, you know, a folding phone that's all screen. But hey, at least you wouldn't need to run a case with that one. And I would also find that weird with the Fold is, you know, you can't really get a case for that. I mean, I'm sure some brilliant person has come up with some kind of case, but still.
What happened?
Considering he's working, he probably switched locations.
Dun dun dun. Yeah, when to go back to the Amazon robot a minute, the Astro. I don't know. I don't know if I want Amazon Alexa looking at everything in my house, riding around.
Right.
This doesn't like.
I'm not even going to put cameras in my house. I have teenagers.
Pretty soon you're just going to hire, like, you're just going to hire somebody from Amazon. They'll just come in and live at your house for you.
Right.
That's it.
Record everything.
There we go.
Some teenager decides to run from the bathroom to her bedroom naked, and it's suddenly on the internet.
Yeah. Well, when you said that, there was some other, like, oh, gosh, I'm trying to remember what it was I was looking at. It was probably, I was probably watching some YouTube videos, and this robot one came on where they took this, like, robot that had this really animated face. I don't think it moved around, and brought it in with this the kid, and it was talking to it and oh, telling okay. I can't remember what the name of the robot was, and I was like, you know, that looks pretty interesting, and then I stopped watching it because it was an ad, so I moved on. But I can't remember what it was for, but it was, I was surprised at how well it was communicating back. This wasn't like your 2XL there. Remember the 2XL, Joel? Or did they get him?
They must have got him.
Did you ever hear the 2XL, Joe?
I don't remember the 2XL. That's a Pixel, right?
No. No, the 2XL was this old, like, way back at the late 70s, early 80s. It was this, like, plastic 8-track player molded in the shape of a robot called 2XL that had flashing lights for eyes, and you put in the cartridge, the 8-track tape, and it would ask you questions and quiz you and stuff.
Oh,
and,
you know,
and you press,
I saw,
like,
one of those, yeah, on my mate Vince. He fixed one. It sounded really cool.
Yeah, well. It was all right. I mean, for the time, it was awesome. I had one. I enjoyed it very much.
Put different like tapes in, and it would ask you different questions. And
yeah, so it was 8-track technology. There were, you know, there was only so many questions it would ask you, but it would play your audio 8-track tapes, because, you know, 8-track was the big thing back in the day, right?
Yeah.
But there we go.
Joel, you're echoing. Joel, we can't hear you. Never mind, don't fix it. Two XL.
I got bounced off for the stupid hotel Wi-Fi here.
That sucks.
Are you using your what is it called, is it the VPN in the box? What is it called?
I had built one a while back with a Raspberry Pi. I called it the Pi-Fi, but it did not stand up to what I needed. So I there are little travel ones. I got like a $60 little travel one that I just bring with me. Hook that thing up to the hotel Wi-Fi, and then everything else just hooks up to that.
There you go.
I got a couple of them that I've set up over the years for a type of pass-through internet, and then just set it up on to pass port 80 so that I can log in with my little device and then let everything else log in through that.
I was running, for the longest time, out on a DigitalOcean droplet, a Streisand Effect VPN server that I would just use, like, when I'm remote and stuff like that, and as a means to basically just prevent, you know, whatever, mask everything that might in a hotel or in an airport or something like that, right? But I tried to log into it the other day, and I guess it because it was based on Ubuntu 16.04, whatever that LTS version was. All the endpoints for their deb, you know, repositories all expired. Their certificates for them all expired. So it's like out of life. So I'm going through and I'm looking. I'm in their GitHub page, And it doesn't, they've archived it, right? So it doesn't appear like they're moving forward with it. But they pointed to, in one of their discussions, found this other one called Algo. It's under the Trail of Bits GitHub repository. Basically, it's the same thing. It's like Ansible. But this is at least based on Ubuntu, I think it's 2004, if I'm not mistaken. But it goes and you give it the cloud provider. It could be a Raspberry Pi. It could be an Ubuntu server, whatever you want, right? Like, so I have I just said, here's my DigitalOcean. You know, here's a key for it to create this thing. And I'm not kidding you. It took all of maybe 10 minutes for it to set this thing up out there. And it's all then WireGuard based. So I have WireGuard here on this MacBook Pro. I have it on my phone. I generated a client that I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to put it into that little server that I have there, that little router that I have. But I can go and give every, like, if I wanted to put it on like all my kids, you know, phones and my wife's phone, like I could generate them all accounts and do that. It was really slick. Like just the whole setup was really quick. Like I said, not even like 10 minutes goes, lays down the image out there and it just sets up all this, the WireGuard stuff for you.
Well, I have OpenVPN set up at the house, and then I have PIA as a backup. So if I'm out and about and I want to access anything, I just use my OpenVPN to, you know, pass the trust to my home network. And then if it's something that I really don't want on my home network anyway, for whatever reason, or if I can't access my home network, I have PIA.
When I'm out and about, like if I'm using like I go to Sam's Club, they have Wi-Fi there. I started using Verizon, now provides a VPN service through them. And I started using it and it's actually pretty nice.
Does it pass it to your house or just pass it to wherever for them?
They're tracking him.
The tracking thing I'm very aware of because they're going to do that anyway.
It takes 5 minutes to set up OpenVPN at the house.
I'm not exactly sure where they are with Spectrum on servers anymore, especially since we got the fiber plan now. And
I do have to start playing with WireGuard.
Right.
It seems like this hot thing, I can't even call it a new hot thing because it's been a couple of years now that it's been out, and it sounds like it's gotten a lot easier to use than when it first came out and I tried it.
Right. So,
definitely something I need to look into.
Yeah, I just use it mostly so that that if anybody's on Sam's network that they can't look into my communications. Verizon, I know they're going to do that anyway.
I just posted the link to that. You can take a look at that, Joe, if you want to. You can run it, like I said, locally on a Pi if you want to or whatever. And it gives you it sets up all the clients for you. You basically either get a QR code that you scan with the WireGuard app, or it gives you like a file you can import into, like say like WireGuard here on the, that I installed on this MacBook, right?
I think as soon as my Windows work laptop goes away, I think I'm going to go with a MacBook.
I want to throw this goddamn thing out the window.
I know. It's better than using Windows, though, right?
Right.
Yes. Yes. That's what all our clients are using right now, and it's like, You know what's worse, though? Like, I've been interviewing a lot of people lately, and we've come up with this pretty rigorous kind of, like, interview process. Where I have them in a sense do a pair programming session with me, but it's fine if they're on a Mac, but if they are on Windows and trying to have them control like IntelliJ on like my machine, it just does not work.
Yep.
Like the shortcut, like they half the time it's like the guy's like, oh, can, or whoever is like, oh, can you, you know, copy and paste that for me, right? It's like, it's the stupidest thing, right? I'm not gonna fault them for it, but the like just don't work between Windows and Mac that well.
Yeah, we have a couple. I'm trying to think if I've ever tried to control his machine. I got at least one coworker lives in Canada. He's a huge Mac guy, and that's what he chose for his system. But, you know, anyway, I'm going to have to wait another couple years before before I get one. They used to have the replacement cycle used to be 2 or 3 years or something like that. But then they extended it to 4. So I'm sitting right at the 2-year mark right now. But, which that.
Yeah, I got to look and see if I'm due for a refresh. The thing that gets me here is, like, it's supposed to, like, they're all about it's supposed to be easy to use and all this kind of stuff, right? Like, this fingerprint reader on here, it will remember my fingerprint for, like, 2 days, and then it never works after that, right? The dongles, the mess of dongles, I can't stand them. Right, I can't stand the constant wires, right? I don't know why anybody thinks that this is appealing. And you have to have all these special things, specialized things for all these connections and stuff like that. It's such a pain in the ass.
Well, it's better than the crappy Thunderbolt dock I have from my Dell. Oh, that thing's awful. I just bump a cable and my screens go out and kind of frustrating.
And this thing doesn't seem to keep battery real well. And now, granted, I do a lot of stuff on here, right? I always have, like, Docker running and IntelliJ running and, you know, Brew is running a bunch of services and stuff like that, right? But, my goodness, if I'm unplugged, like, I have to plug in within, like, a half hour. Like, it's not good.
Yeah. Well, I'm used to that on my Dell.
Yeah, evidently PIA does have WireGuard set up.
There you go.
That too.
And I'm still rocking my Wyze watch that I bought because of Rich. I highly recommend it. I like it better than Android Wear or Wear OS or whatever they call it now.
It works well for you?
Yep. Yeah, probably my biggest complaint, and it's a minor one, is how long it actually takes to recharge. Now, if I would remember to, like, what Rich always did is he'd start off with it at 100%, and then, like, he'd put it on a charger every morning while he's getting ready for the day, you know, getting showered and all that stuff, and then, by that time, he said it's usually recharged up from, you know, 90-something to 100% at that point. But I think also he may end up using, like, I have mine set to do the heart rate every, well, I think it's every 5 minutes, I think. I think that puts more of a drain on the battery. Just do that heart rate check. And ironically, I'd rather actually have it do the pulse oximeter check every 5 minutes versus that, just because I'd like to see what that, especially at night, I'd like to see what that is when I have my CPAP on. But
that's interesting, but seeing my heart rate when I sleep.
That too, yeah. It's also nice too,
because it'll get down to like 35,
right?
And yes, I saw a doctor about it. Sure that I wasn't what's the word, bradycardic,
right? Now my good thing is, and I'm really not doing anything, but but mostly portion control, not eating as much as I usually do or usually would. And I don't know if I actually lost weight because I actually have to fix my scale yet. But
I made it down to 201 pounds.
Okay. I take my blood sugar every morning, and I take my blood pressure every morning as well, and both have been down lately. So that's a good sign.
So one thing you have to watch out for, Joel, is doing blood sugar right in the morning is the dawn effect. I don't know if you ever heard of this or not, but your glucose is much higher in the morning right after you wake up as your body's like coming out.
Right.
So that's something to keep in mind. So either try to do it either, you know, if you're doing it then, but then also do it like if you've eaten yet or not, like do it, you know, within maybe an hour or two later, or if you've eaten, like wait at least 2 hours till you've eaten and stuff like that.
Right. And the thing is I can really test as much as I want because my work provides me with a Livongo. It that gives me both the devices, so the strips and the all the supplies for the meter are free to me. I don't have to pay anything when I run out. In fact, the meter itself's got a like a 4G connection on it built into it. When I get low, it puts a prompt on there and I just tap a button and then it automatically sends them to me.
That's awesome. They get expensive.
Yep. They can. And not to mention the fact the base one our insurance would give you doesn't have any of that tracking thing. In Livongo, I can pull up the app and I can literally print out a PDF and email it to my doctor if he wants to see it. So that's
I actually just bought a new one. It's blood glucose, ketones, uric acid, and total cholesterol.
Interesting. Like
I was surprised. It's called the Fora 6 Connect. And I do. I'm not diabetic or anything like that. I just do it just to you know, because I'm just interested in the numbers, right? Like I just went and did this whole big massive panel on my own, right? Like you can go and do this. There's a site called ownyourlabs.com, and you can basically go and you can contribute all the results to the Citizen Science Foundation, which they're using to kind of do these more broader studies and how these alternative kind of like, you know, ways of eating, you know, lifestyles are kind of, you know, more prevalent that doctors just don't get me started on what doctors don't know about nutrition. And, you know,
their nutritionists don't know about nutrition.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, so I went and did this whole thing and I'd never done like an A1C and I'm like well below like what it's supposed to be. Like all my inflammation markers are like well below what they're, you know, in the range that they're supposed to be, but you know, nothing is like, that's the thing that I'm trying to track is make sure that I'm doing all that stuff. And they flipped out because the one thing, because I eat a low carb lifestyle, is my LDL cholesterol is high, and they flip out over this. The doctor flips out. He has me going to a cardiologist. I'm like, and I'm trying to talk to the cardiologist to show him the results and the studies and whatnot that are, because I follow this stuff constantly. I'm constantly reading about it. I'm constantly looking at, you know, what people are finding about it, these studies and whatnot. And they just don't want to subscribe to this at all. Like there is nothing wrong with me. There is one number that is off and it's that, right? LDL cholesterol. And they think that I'm going to basically, you know, keel over and die, you know, yesterday.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I had the same issue, but I have to work with those VA doctors or they start getting stupid. So I switched from the low carb diet to volume eating, and I lost 40 pounds, 45 pounds now. My weight is much better. I'm getting my cholesterol checked again in 2 weeks. So we'll see where it's at. But I did have to start adding fat back into my diet because it was starting to mess with my hormones. It got so low.
Yep.
Yeah, your body needs saturated fat, even though they've said for years and years and years about low fat this and low fat that. And, you know, your brain is mostly saturated fat and cholesterol.
So, you must have watched fat.
What are we trying to do? What are they trying to give us is everything to reduce our saturated fat and cholesterol.
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, I had to add some whole eggs back in and salmon. Well, catfish, almonds, things like that. All things I like anyway. So.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, Dan must have watched Fathead, which is a really good documentary, by the way, on that stuff.
Actually, I never saw that one, but other good ones are Fat, a Documentary, and Fat, a Documentary 2. A third version of that is coming out in January. But just all the, like, I just finished this really good book on, it's called Metabolical. Like, it's about the food industry and what they do to the overprocessing of the foods and how they try to hide sugar in everything, basically. You know, and the ways that they do it, the ways they go about it, right? Like, it's really good.
The crap that the U.S. government allows them to do. I mean,
Oh, yeah.
They're allowed to be off by as much as 20%. If it's less than 5 calories per serving, they can call it zero. So they just cut the calorie size down to so small that nobody would even look at it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't make cooking spray be not oil. So you can't actually make it zero calorie. It's just 1/16 of a spray. 1/16 of a second spray gets you zero calories. So this is a zero calorie spray.
Yep. Try cooking your egg in that. It's gonna stick like crazy. Now I just use
butter. Just use butter.
Right. I did try HelloFresh. I just got one set of 4 meals, and I cooked all those. My biggest problem with those, there's really 2 problems I got with those meal delivery services, is a lot of times they'll use ingredients specific to them, like their brand of a spice or something like that, or a spice mix, or their concentrated chicken broth or something that goes in it. So that's kind of one thing. And the other thing is my wife is like, I'll try anything and I'll eat anything for the most part. I try to pick recipes I know she'll eat, but even then it's like sometimes it will have something in it that, like, it might have like, one time did Dinnerly, which is another one of those. It included sambal oelek as one of the ingredients, which I'm perfectly fine with. If you like sriracha, you'll like that. It pretty much tastes close to the same. But you know, she's tried it and she's like, "It is too spicy." I'm like, "It's not really spicy at all." So it's like I just can't. It'd be better if they included like stuff that you can get, or at least instructions that tell you how to make it on your own after you're done. Teach people how to cook meals.
Right. So yeah, Steph was getting some of those for a while, like when I was traveling, and they contract. So whether you go with one company or another, they always have the same contractors that come out. So don't get me started on like the stuff that just comes in and the dry ice, like just as gone. Like that's a whole nother issue, right? But she stopped specifically because the driver would come up, and if my kids were out front, like when they were, this was a few years ago when they were a little bit younger, right? And he was like saying stuff to these girls, like it was my kids. This was before we moved. It was my kids and it was the neighbor's kids, and they were all girls and they were all out there. And like they came in and told her the stuff that he was saying. I don't remember what it was off the top of my head, but it was not good. Like, this guy needs to go to jail or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, These were at the time probably like, you know, 11, 12, 13 year old girls, you know, maybe even a little younger, maybe 12 was probably their oldest age. And the stuff that they were saying, he said, was like, I was like, this guy, you know, get rid of this. Get rid of this now. We don't need this guy coming back around here.
It might, It's strange because this stuff I've had delivered like that have all came via FedEx or something like that. So, I mean, it makes me wonder if that was a FedEx driver. But anyway.
Back to cooking. I don't know. But I like to cook with coconut flour, not because it's coconut flour, just because of how absorbent it is.
Oh, yeah. A little goes a long way.
Right? So I can use less of it and let it soak up more of everything else. And then, yes, it's lower calorie, but it's also fluffier.
Well, it's not even necessarily lower calorie. It's definitely low carb, though. There's in a little bit, like not even a, like a, like usually you see it substituted in like a tablespoon for like almost like a half a cup or something like that. Right.
Right.
Like,
right.
And so that's why, I mean, it's definitely that absorbent capability in there, but I wouldn't say low calorie, but definitely it's low carb.
Right, you're using less of it, though.
Yes, right.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, love cooking with coconut flour.
Yep, I can see that.
Ooh, and oat flour.
Now, it must just be the Pit Boss group, but I keep seeing them trying strange things I never would have thought of trying before, like smoking cream cheese, which...
That was a TikTok thing that people started doing.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And it was the same with the feta and the tomatoes. Like there's a bunch of those things that I've seen in recent months.
Yep, that one. And see, another one I saw on there was, they said, I'm trying to remember what they call it, chili over the top. So basically, you do your normal chili recipe, so your tomatoes and everything, you know, beans, if you put beans in your chili. All right. So you put that...
Only if you want to call it chili.
Well, yeah. But you put that on in your Pit Boss or your pellet smoker, I guess. And then you take the meat, and I guess you could probably put the onions and stuff like that in there too. And you basically make a meatball that you put on a grate over top of the pot with the chili parts in it. So then you basically smoke or cook that until that meat's done, and then you put the meat in the chili and break it up. Which I'm
thinking. Yeah, you're capturing the drippings from that, so it's rendering out while it's smoking. Right.
Yep. Well, and I guess your meat would have a little bit of smoke flavor to it too. Of course, I do say if you have a Pit Boss, like I have a 850 XL, I think. For the things you need to really cook at a higher temperature, get a smoke tube. Because what I found is, other than like the smoke mode, which is like an absurdly low temperature, that's the only way that it actually generates a lot of smoke for the flavoring. So what I do is I'll take the smoke tube and I'll do one of two things. I'll either hit it with a torch to light it before I throw it on top of the grill, or I may like let it warm up longer, you know, at the top end of the cycle, before I put the meat on, so that the tube catches on fire and starts to smoke. Once that happens, then I actually do get some pretty good smoke flavor. And I just bought a cheap-ass smoke tube. It doesn't have to be expensive. I bought, like mine. I'm sure mine came from China.
I don't have a smoker or anything like that. But, yeah, just my air fryer. Love my air fryer.
As do I.
Air fryer, convection oven, whatever you want to call it. That way I don't have to, you know, if I'm making something small, I ain't got to warm up the actual oven.
Yep. So I don't know if I want to try the chili that way, but another thing I saw on there, and it's near and dear to my heart, not on Dan Fry's diet, but smoking Chex Mix. You know, like make your homemade Chex Mix on the Pit Boss, and I thought, that could be interesting.
I need to make myself some fish and chips this evening.
There you go.
I don't think that's on his diet either, since, you know, fries. Nope.
Not the but chips anyway.
It'll be, what, probably 660 calories total, so well within what I can eat today.
so. I do have at least one of those meals that I probably could figure out that I cooked from HelloFresh, and that was a turkey. Fajita bowl. So it had like rice. So if I wanted to make a lower carb, I could use the rice, cauliflower, and turkey, spices, some tomato, peppers, onions.
We were talking about serving sizes earlier. Right. That's a big one right there. French fries?
It is, yes.
I mean, they're 85 grams of French fries is supposed to be one serving, and depending on which brand you buy, it's either 100, 120, or 150 calories because of the amount of oil that gets used, oil and spices. Yep. So, but have you ever seen 85 grams of French fries?
Yeah, it's tiny, frickin' like three
pathetic.
Fries.
Pathetic, yeah.
So that type of stuff is all supposed to be changing the food labeling and all that kind of stuff. Like, they're going to start changing over from grams to like teaspoons, like especially sugar. Like, you don't realize, right, you don't realize how many, you know, when you look at it and it says 36 grams of sugar, right? Do you realize how many teaspoons that actually is? That's nine teaspoons of sugar. Like, that's like a standard.
I don't want them to switch to a teaspoon system. I would much rather they switch to a calories per gram system. But that's me.
Calories
are
the misnomer out there, right? Like, calories should not be on the label at all whatsoever. They don't, if you are conscious about like the types of things you're eating and stuff like that, calorie is a unit of work. Like, that's it. Yes. Doesn't make sense in terms of internal how your body is going to process them, because a calorie is not a calorie no matter what anybody says. It depends on how your body reacts to the way, right, you know, different, you know, right, you know, fat calories versus carbohydrate calories and whatnot, right? Certain things like are never, like, for instance, we were talking about blood sugar before, like the fat is never going to spike your blood sugar no matter what. However, some protein to a degree will, carbohydrates definitely will, right? Calories in, calories out is not the way to go. It thinks it's a measure of fluid dynamics, which it's not. Your body does not react that way.
I'm going to disagree with you right there. Calories in, calories out does work. If you're still gaining weight when you're eating X number of calories, reduce your calories. You're either going to stop gaining weight or start losing weight. If you stop gaining weight, then that's maintenance. If you cut more, you should start losing weight. Calories in, calories out will work.
But that is, you're assuming every calorie is treated in the body identically, and it's not the case.
I'm not assuming that. What I'm saying is if you're eating X number of calories a day and putting on weight, reduce that number of calories, and either you'll stop gaining weight, well, if you reduce it enough, or you'll gain weight more slowly, and then reduce it more, and then reduce it more. Eventually, you're going to start losing weight, and that should be able to tell you where your maintenance is, dependent on how many calories you're taking in, and how quickly or slowly you're gaining or losing weight.
But the problem with that is like, if I'm eating, you know, all my calories in Twizzlers every day, right? Basically, my body's saying, hey, this is sugar. I need to go store this thing because insulin is going to spike every time I eat that. And it's going to drive it into storage rather than try to burn it. Whereas if I'm eating like an egg or something like that, you know, where your body is going to take
protein
and not
store slowly anyway.
Yeah.
It takes more energy to digest protein than it does a carb. But still, if you want to break it down into macros, then that's fine too. But overall, even with your licorice example, eventually you're going to eat little enough licorice that you're not gaining weight anymore.
No, but you're still going to exceed the size of your fat cells that are inside there already that are going to go into storage.
Your body would start breaking down muscles for protein. And yes, it could potentially build fat, but you're mostly going to stay at the same weight, even though your body composition will change.
Yeah, so the goal should really be more about getting healthy rather than necessarily losing weight, because when you get healthy, losing the weight comes off automatically with that.
Yeah. which is why my diet is higher protein, higher fiber, less carbs, but also less fat, because fat is calorically dense.
I'll disagree there, but it really should be just reduced sugar. Oh, I know it is. I know it is. But reducing sugar is probably the main thing that should be focused on anymore. And any starch turns into sugar in the body, no matter what. And don't let anybody confuse you with, oh, it's natural sugar, because there's no such thing. Your liver says, hey, that's sugar. I don't care where it came from. A potato, a Twizzler, you know, whatever. It's all sugar in the end with that.
Okay, because I'm not on a ketosis diet, because I'm not taking in that fat, I do need to burn energy somewhere. So I do take in some starches for that energy.
Right.
Like I said, I got to work with my doctors because it's the VA.
Right. Yep.
Point this to some newer research, though.
I'll have the same problems you will, believe me, because I pointed out their dieting fallacies in the past, and it's in one ear and out the other, because they have a degree in that particular field, and I don't.
Yeah, that's a lot of bullshit there with them. It drives me up the wall that the fact that they are not looking at science at all when it comes to this stuff. Most doctors have one, maybe two classes on nutrition. And if you got a guy or a woman who's been doing this for 30 years, like, there's no incentive for them to go in and keep up to date, right? I mean.
All right, we got to wrap this up. I got to get to bed. It was great seeing you again, Manfra.
Hey. I'll try to pop on again if I'm, you know, unfortunately, this has been kind of mostly when I travel, and traveling has not happened in the last, you know, 18 months, right? So,
yeah. So, you have, get your work done and stay safe out there, man.
Hey, thanks.
I'll be happy to talk more nutrition with you if you come on again.
Oh, I'm always down to talk about this stuff.
I'm still going to say calories in, calories out.
I will say update your research.
All right, well, at that, here are your promos, and we'll see you in October. Have a good one.
I am short.
Oh, my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? With my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
You know, another thing that helps? Having to go up and down stairs every day to go to my office.
There you go.
Yeah, that's more calories out.
Anyway, we'll see you guys.
I'm stopping recording. Say goodnight, Joel.
Good night, Joel.
How's Jungle Jim's doing? Hey, Joe.
They made like a real big change to the front of their store. So like they moved all their cookware, which kind of used to be kind of in the back of it, up front. And then they added like a huge toy section along with collectibles too. So I got me a Pac-Man mug.
You have Pac-Man fever?
Of course. I haven't played in a while, though. I need to. Yeah, heck, they even had lightsabers.
In a mug?
No, they had, like, the really nice ones.
Hey, Pat.
I don't know if he's really there or not.
Yeah, right before I came down here, there was people were hitting me up. They're like, there's a VO! One of the nodes down in Couch Base in the West. And I was like, oh my goodness. This is hopefully not going to take a long time. And it was a false alarm because New Relic was having problems. Not Couch Base, which is a blessing.
How's it going?
Hey, what's up, Pat?
Good.
All right. How's that 8-day work week going there, Joe?
I'm on vacation.
Get out of here.
I'm on vacation.
What happened?
They found out how much vacation I had and said, you can't take it all at the end of the year, so you need to take some now. So I'm on vacation.
Well, who's watching the shop while you're on vacation?
The rest of the team. I try to make sure they're trained up well enough to do it if I'm not there so I don't get called. But I know a couple of days when I showed up late, a bunch of crap didn't get done that I normally just do out of hand. So I'm hoping that it got done without any issues.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, well, you know what? They haven't called me, so one of the developers probably complained and somebody realized, oh, we need to do this.
Right. Or like in my case, where I have stuff that I'm behind on, this is actually a good topic for the show. I'll say it real quick, but then I'll say it again because it's basically
a double penetration.
Too many admins lazy webbing it by just throwing it out on Slack. It says, hey, Joel, do you know how to do this or how to fix this? And it's like, what do? I go fucking Google it. I go to our own support site, right? You know, so blah, blah, blah. Anyway.
Hold on. So, let me Google that for you real quick.
LMTGFY.com?
Yeah.
Yep. But, you know, so it's like, that's something I want to get into a discussion on because it happens far too often on my team.
No, what gets me is developers that have access to production.
Oh.
Because that's not a big no-no at all.
No.
Well, how are you going to push your code if you don't have access to production? Well, how are you going to fix your code if you don't have access to production, right?
Because that's what support is for. Either use your support team or get rid of your support team and don't do any development because you're too busy doing support.
Or you write a change, and the change, instead of it being a well-managed change, it's a cluster F because you're doing 500 things in one change.
Yeah, not good. We have applications like that. Some of our legacy applications, like people didn't want to make new applications because it's too much of a process, so they'll just tack shit on to other applications and call it the same thing, especially our older ones. So some of our releases for one application is actually releases for like five applications all at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It makes things super fun.
Now that's kind of how our quarterly updates are. We have to install stuff in the core system first, which that's no big deal. But then we have to upgrade each of the sites. So you got to upgrade the API site, the self-service site, and the UI site all in one shot. And if they've customized API or self-service, holy crap. You know, because in my case, it's like instead of one organization, we're kind of doing stuff for 51. So needless to say, we got a huge push for automation and a lot of that stuff because...
Yeah, I will say that our releases in the last year or so have become a lot less manual. There are still some applications where the release process is still a bit manual, where I have to manually go in and push things out,
right,
or manually access a server to make an update or a fix. But there's like two of us on the team that actually know how to do that, so...
Yeah. Yep. And then I've got new people who are better than the people that have been there for 5 years. I'm like, I'm supposed to be training the new people on the nuances of living in the cloud, in our case.
Yeah.
And I spend more time telling the ones that have been there for 5 years and should know better.
Well, the ones that have been there for 5 years or longer or older and have been doing this for a really long time, sometimes they really get set in their ways and it's really difficult to get them on board with a new technology. I don't know if that's the issue you're having, but I have seen that.
Sometimes.
My problem is that we're not allowed to hire external. We have to use anybody that's on the bench first, and only contractors are getting hired for external if we can't find anybody internal. And now, that wouldn't be an issue, but generally the people that end up on the bench are people that didn't do well on their last team.
Yep. Yeah, so yeah. That's very, very, very frustrating thing there. But and I'll have to see if I can get the feed.
Now, I can train anybody.
Oh yeah.
To do
same thing.
To do my job, I really literally can, but I cannot force people to actually have this little thing called work ethic.
Right. Right. Or like, I get handed a change, and it's like, I'm like, and this is something I've been working with the dude on, and I'm like, he says, can you peer review this? I go to peer review, and I'm reading it, and I'm like, nope, you need to fix it.
Right. Right. Oh, they finally pulled me off of, well, I'm still an approver, so I can go in as a backup to our main guy that's looking
at releases right now. Right.
But they pulled me off because I was actually trying to enforce the rules. Or at least that's what it felt like. They didn't, you know, come out and say it that way, but
right.
You're supposed to have X amount of lead time. Setting it up with bullshit instructions and then putting the instructions in 20 minutes before the release is not 5 day lead time.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, the first episode of our tentatively titled iTech Gear Weekly podcast is out. I'll have to see if I can get the RSS feed for y'all.
How's your gaming one going?
Let's see, what did I do last week? I'm trying to remember. I gotta record this week. I usually try to pre-record the episode and then I release it Saturdays at midnight.
I haven't listened to any of them yet.
So, oh, that's alright.
But I have been listening to podcasts lately.
Trust me, I'm kind of that way a little bit too, but
once I start driving into work again, that'll change.
What did I do? Oh, I did ColecoVision last week, I think. Yeah, which I actually had that recorded. I recorded that during the day last week, so that's why I had last week. This week, I don't know what I'm doing yet. I've done the ColecoVision. I've done in television. I think it's time to look at an arcade game again. I got to figure out which one I want to do.
Base Invaders, obviously.
I already did that. That was like first or second episode, if I remember right.
Joust.
Yeah. You know what? That's a good one. That's a really good one because it's got a ton of ports too. And some of them are really good. Like the 7800 version of Joust is excellent. Thank you.
Oh, you know, I have to apologize, Joel. I haven't listened to it yet, but I am just pulling down all the episodes right now
to put
on
my
player. No, I've been meaning to listen to it. I really want to. I know I'm going to enjoy it because you cover a lot of topics I find interesting on there.
Yep.
Well, if you start covering emulation, let me know. I'd love to, you know, talk about it with you.
Yep. I actually need to think about that. I was over at I've been to Sam's Club and they started getting some of their Christmas stuff in, and they do have the Legends Ultimate cabinet. They have it in stock, but they don't have a demo unit set up. Usually they do set up a demo unit, so I just want to see what it looks like. But
I'm still loving the PSP for emulation.
Yeah,
I just found out that this PS3 that I got like at a really good price, I took it apart, I cleaned it up, I replaced the thermal paste, I put it back together. It's working just fine. Takes the controller, takes DVDs, it works. I don't have any games to put in it. I looked into custom firmware for it, but it just so happens that that particular model number, you cannot put permanent custom firmware on it, which sucks. Or I might turn it into an emulation station.
Yeah, I may look at getting like a Switch just to get all the emulating games.
Yeah, I've also been looking at Switches in need of repair. But for most of the repairs that you would do for a Nintendo Switch, I'd need a hot air gun too.
I don't know if he has a feed yet. I'll be talking to Chris, who's the main guy that's taking care of this. In fact, I'm going to write my first article for this website soon too. That has the MP3 file. You can download it and listen to it. We talked about the Apple thing.
Is Manfred joining us?
That's a good question.
That would be awesome.
And I want to talk about Amazon's robot.
Oh, do they have a robot out?
Yep. It's called Astro.
Are you hearing noise from my mic?
Only when you touch it.
Yeah, it sounds like you're moving it around or something.
Right now?
Or beating it off. No, not right now. A minute ago when you weren't talking.
Right.
Picking if up a I'm lot not, of background noise, but I'm not overly worried about it. It's not bad or anything.
If I'm not talking, is it making noise?
It's not right now.
Nope.
How about now?
Nope.
Now when you're talking, it's not making noise. It was making noise
all
the time, and now it's not.
Like right now, I hear your keyboard.
I heard you breathe a couple of times. That was it.
Yeah.
But before, it sounded like you were just rubbing across the top of the thing. No, it sounds good.
Okay. Because Graybeard was saying that there's some mic noise, and I'm trying to. I think my volume, my recording volume.
Sure, it's not like mine, because I'm lifting weights and talking to y'all, and I'm set for voice activity.
So what I'm seeing right now is I see it's picking up sound, but now it's not.
It sounds a lot better.
Okay. I'll drop it down just a little more. Because I don't hear anything. and nobody has said anything except Greybeard, and you guys haven't said anything, which is weird, because I would have thought you would have said something.
Honestly, it was just part of the background for me. It wasn't even that bad. I didn't notice it until you actually said something about it.
I want this show to be perfect, man.
Then you're on the wrong show.
I was going to say.
You have to get rid of Joel.
How dare you?
All
right. We should start this show off, because I want to hear.
Yo.
I got some stuff. Here we go. This is 924, I think. Yeah, 924.
924 on 929.
Yep. Second last day in September.
And last show for September.
Yeah, that's true. Here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.